If you ever go up to the north of Spain, to the regions of Asturias or Galicia, you might be surprised to hear in the distance a familiar sound of an instrument you normally associate with other countries. A sound as distinctive and alluring as it is, on occasion, annoying. The bagpipe. And if you recall the famous Talking Heads song, Once in a Lifetime, you ask yourself, how did that get there? And then you learn that in those areas, a long time ago, the Celts used to live there. Yes, the very Celts you think of when you think of places like Ireland or Scotland, not northern Spain. And you ask yourself again, how did they get there? You think there must be some kind of mistake, but there isn't, and I'll tell you why. So far, we've talked a little bit about the earliest years of the land that would eventually become Spain, and Portugal for that matter, and how it used to be inhabited by different species of hominins, human-like species from the same family as ours, and eventually about the lives of the early Homo sapiens. And we also saw the marvels early humans were capable of producing at places like the caves of Altamira and the paintings there. But now let's move on to the next period, because we start to get to a point where what happens during this period and the people involved will begin to have an impact on Spanish history down the line. It's still a little indirect at this point, but you'll see what we mean when we talk about that influence. We are talking about the pre-Roman era, and we'll have to approach this with care in order to make some sense of it, if we can make any sense of it at all, because if there is one age, one stage of Spain's history which seems to be rife with controversy, questions, and debate concerning just about everything having to do with it, this is it. Pre-Roman history in Spain is a mess. But you know what? Pre-Roman history in Europe is a mess too. And you get the sense that as time goes by, it doesn't get any clearer. You see, just as I am trying to simplify things for my listeners, scholars are happily moving in the opposite direction and making things more complex. And it's made me very wary about talking about this period, about proceeding here. But we have to face the music and work this out. So I will start with a disclaimer saying that basically everything you hear today may end up being false one day. I hope not, but you never know. But it's not my fault. But anyway, let's give it a whirl and see how we do. We'll start with some basic facts here. There were communities, tribes, peoples, groups all over the Iberian Peninsula during the 700 to 800 years at least before the arrival of the Romans. That is from about 1000 BCE until about 200 BCE. North, south, east, west, in the middle, they were everywhere. Who were they? The classic version of this period explains that the early settlers in Spain were divided into three basic groups. Groups that apparently migrated to the peninsula from the middle and north of Europe. They were known as the Iberians, the Celts, and the Celtic Iberians. Geographically, the division could be explained in the following way. If you take the Iberian Peninsula, that includes Spain and Portugal, and look at it as if it were a square, with a little imagination, we could start to draw a line starting in the northeast corner, where present-day Catalonia is, and go diagonally down to the southwest corner of Spain. And to the east, that is, to the right of that line, would be where the Iberians lived. That is sort of along the Mediterranean coast and inland somewhat. And to the west, that is to the left of that line, that would be where the Celts roamed and settled. And in the middle, sort of especially in the north, there would be sort of a section of territory where the Celtic Iberians dominated. So I hope that makes some sense to you. Those are, or were, traditionally the big three. As time has gone by, that model has been challenged more and more, and for some pretty good reasons. And yet, you still see it as the most common description of pre-Roman Spain. You basically see it everywhere. But it's wrong, at least partly wrong. And wrong in the sense that the real situation was probably much more complex than just three sections or three groups. There are other groups and factors that need to be taken into account, but we can discuss them at a later time. Let's just keep it simple for the moment, because there are some general truths to what I mentioned, that is, to the original model, so let's not throw it out yet. In fact, if I had to emphasize two groups, they would have to be the Celts and the Iberians, because despite all the revisionist theories, they are still generally the dominant groups during that period. So let's take a look here. Now, since we started this episode with a reference to the Celts, I think the smoothest way would be to focus on them first. Let's see what they were all about. One of the first things we notice is that the academic debate I was telling you about immediately appears when we get to these people. And it revolves around who they were and where they came from. And those are some pretty important points. Now, you'd think that there would be a straightforward answer to this, but unfortunately, it seems nothing is straightforward when it comes to dealing with this period. One of the main problems is the word Celt or Celtic, which has such a broad meaning that the mere term can cause all sorts of confusion. It means so many different things to so many different people in so many different ways, often for totally unrelated subjects, that some scholars treat it almost as if it were radioactive. Who were the Celts? In very general terms, they were a group of Indo-European peoples or communities which shared a similar culture and language and religion in many cases. Where did they come from? Well, the general and traditional theory is that they came from Central Europe, around Germany, in an area called Hallstatt, and then there was sort of a later group that sort of developed in what would be Switzerland today in an area called Tenn. And from there, they sort of spread out in all different directions, extending all the way from Western Ireland to Turkey. That idea still prevails in many intellectual circles, and it is the predominant belief you find in books. But a not-so-small school of thought asserts it's the opposite way around. They say the Celts started in Western Europe along the Atlantic coastal regions and headed in the other direction, that is, eastward. So that should give you an idea of just how confusing this subject can get. Anyway, who's right? Well, we'll have to leave it to the experts to make up their minds, and hopefully they will finally come up with a definitive consensus at some point in the future. What's important to us for our purposes is that they were in the Iberian Peninsula, and they lived in the northern and western half of Spain. So that's good to know. When did they get there? Well, that's another debate. But the general belief is that it was somewhere between 900 and 600 BCE. Though it could have been earlier. There was an idea that they actually started long ago as a Bronze Age group. And so it could have been 1200 BCE and even before that. The Celts in Spain weren't one giant union or nation, but rather large regions of peoples, which were then broken up into dozens, if not scores, of different tribes. They generally had a number of things in common. As I said, the same language family, sometimes similar architectural features with their buildings and homes, a similar hierarchical setup. Obviously, the religion was often basically the same, or if not similar. And then also similar burial traditions. And then more recently, there is genetic evidence. So that's sort of what the experts look for when they say this is a Celtic group. A number of these groups are little known internationally, unless you were Spanish and had to study their history or are a Spanish culture geek like me. These include tribes or people like the Bretones in the west of Spain, the Bacteos, from what would be old Castile, sort of Valladolid and Segovia, or the Carpetanos, who inhabited the land around present-day Madrid and Guadalajara and further south, or the Lusitanians, for example, who lived in Portugal. But then you have others which may begin to ring a bell. And this should interest us because this is where we can link this period along the long and winding history of Spain. We will continue to see and hear these names come up again and again. Tribes that inhabited the northernmost regions of present-day Spain include the Galicians, the Astures, and the Cantabres, or the Cantabrians. If you are familiar with Spanish geography, these names should sound familiar to you, as you notice that the names of the regions of Spain in those parts come directly from them. I am talking about the regions of Galicia, Asturias, and Cantabria. Speaking of Galicia, you should also be able to see a relationship between the word Galicia and Gaul, the old word for France, or Gaelic in Scotland and Ireland, and even Galicia in Turkey. Even Portugal most likely gets its name from Port of Galia or Port of Calais. Galicia, in fact, is the region most closely associated with the world of the Celts, but the fact is that legacy is probably way overblown, the product of a romantic imagination from the 19th and 20th century. But still, if you go up there, you're going to see a lot of references to the Celts. What do we know about them? A couple of the basic things are, the Celts lived in different kinds of settlements, villages, bigger towns, sometimes known as oppidums or oppida. The most famous communities were the hilltop forts, known as castros. The dwellings in these castros were famous for their characteristic round shape. Castros are particularly famous in Galicia. Now, if the name Castro sounds familiar to you, well, it shouldn't surprise you that the late Fidel Castro, the former dictator of Cuba, well, his father was originally from the region of Galicia in Spain. It's a common last name there. The word Castro actually comes from the Latin for fort, castrum, which is where we get place names like Castor in English, as in Lancaster, or Chester, as in Westchester. So there's a little word fun for you today. They also spoke an Indo-European language, which would make sense because they were Indo-European, and it was sort of that typical Celtic language family. Their religion was polytheistic. They believed in deities that were similar to other Celtic cultures. They were excellent metalworkers, as were many people from the Iberian Peninsula. Their livestock was mainly goats and sheep. They had agriculture. They grew a lot of grains and made flour. They made beer, but apparently they loved wine. The social structure was hierarchical and generally led by military leaders. They were also known for being rugged people, tough military opponents, as the Romans would soon find out. Pacifying them was a struggle to say the least, and in some cases, a lost cause. But we'll get to that when we get to the Romanization period. So those were the Celts. Then you have the Celtic Iberians, which today we generally use to refer to a region of people who lived in the north-center part of Spain, sort of east and north of Madrid, to situate ourselves. They have often been treated as a separate ethnic group, forming a sort of poorly defined blob in the middle of this map of Spain. But the fact is they are really, or really were, Celts, which is why we are including them in this episode and not really treating them as a separate group. The fame they earned came mostly through classical sources like the Romans, who probably got it wrong when it came to classifying them. In any event, they were quite advanced and benefited from their proximity to the Iberians, who, as we will see, in turn benefited from their proximity to the Greeks, Phoenicians, and Carthaginians. The Celtic Iberians also lived in some pretty large towns. We will bring them up again when we get to the Roman conquest of Spain. And I think we will stop there. That's a good place. And we will talk about the Iberians and others from that period in the next episode. This has been episode 3 of Brian's Spain Domain Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please feel free to leave us a comment. We love the feedback. Stay well, stay healthy, and hasta pronto.